I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Aggression, insomnia, headaches, even seizures. A traumatic brain injury can generate profound consequences for individuals and their families. Today we'll hear from Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke University Medical Center and co-author of A Family Guide to Coping with Brain Injuries. And we'll talk to a husband and wife who struggled to adjust to their new normal after an accident. Plus, opening later this week, a movie about repetitive brain injury and professional football. We'll speak with a sports neurologist about the potential impact of repetitive brain trauma. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you're with us today. We have an interesting conversation ahead of us. You know, headaches, insomnia, even seizures and psychosis, traumatic brain injuries can generate a wide array of symptoms, some temporary, some very long-lasting. Each year, more than 2 million emergency room visits are due to head trauma. Today, we'll talk about brain injuries, from mild concussion to a life-altering injury, and the impact they have on a person's mental and physical health, and on their relationships with family and friends. And later in the hour, on Christmas Day, a movie about brain damage suffered by professional football players will open. We'll talk to a concussion expert who has consulted for the Ravens and the Orioles. Are concerns about concussions overplayed? How does experiencing repeated concussions impact the brain? With us now on the line from Duke University Medical Center is Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke's Preston Robert Tisch Brain Tumor Center. He co-wrote the new book, The Traumatized Brain, A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior After Brain Injury, published by Johns Hopkins University Press. His co-author is Vani Rao, an associate professor and director of the Brain Injury Clinic at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Dr. Vaishnavi, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're with us, too. And with me in Studio A here are Tom and Mary Longest. 8 years ago, Tom fell from a ladder. His brain injury was not diagnosed right away, and he suffered from sleep and mood problems that greatly impacted his career and his family. I'm so glad you're with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Dr. Vaishnavi, let's start with the very basics. What is traumatic brain injury, TBI, and how prevalent is it?
So traumatic brain injury is where there is some impact on the brain. It could be with a car accident, could be with a fall, could be with sports injuries, but there is some change, some jostling to the brain within the skull. And to get a diagnosis of traumatic brain injury, it's important to note that it has to be some dazing or confusion right afterwards. And of course, if it's more severe, people can lose consciousness as well. In terms of prevalence, we have some numbers, but it's probably an underestimate in terms of the total number of traumatic brain injuries because a lot of them are undiagnosed. About 70% of them are actually mild traumatic brain injuries or concussions, and so some of them do get to medical attention and some don't. But as you mentioned, there are 2 million or so emergency room visits a year with concussions. There are approximately 5 to 6 million people on disability because of brain injury. And so brain injury is actually quite a big public health problem, and it's probably underdiagnosed, if anything.
Yeah, you in the book, you use the phrase silent epidemic. Why epidemic? Why silent?
So silent because a lot of the symptoms of traumatic brain injury are not well known or they're not well appreciated because they can be kind of general. So for example, in the book, in The Traumatized Brain, we talk a lot about the neuropsychiatric symptoms of brain injuries, such as mood problems, behavioral problems, memory and attention problems, those kinds of things. And it's not always clear that those kinds of symptoms are correlated with a brain injury. So there are lots of people across the country who are suffering from these symptoms who may have had brain injuries, but they're not necessarily correlating the two. So it's silent in that sense.
You flew past a word a minute ago that is the word that a lot of people center their understanding of this whole issue around, and that's the word concussion. I noticed that even this is a guide for families and people who have had TBI, and you include in the book a glossary of terms that families might need to know when they're talking to their doctors. Concussion is not on that list, and yet it's a word we use all the time. So what exactly is concussion?
So concussion, the way I think about it is that it's essentially a mild traumatic brain injury. So you can divide brain injury into three types. So there's mild TBI or traumatic brain injury, there's moderate, and there's severe. And these are, the divisions are actually based on some specific criteria. And there are different ways to look at it, but one way to look at it is that a mild traumatic brain injury or a concussion would be where there is no loss of consciousness or there is loss of consciousness up to 30 minutes. And moderate would be 30 minutes up to 24 hours, and severe would be more than 24 hours. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is with something called post-traumatic amnesia, which is basically how long before you start making new memories. And there are different criteria for that. But essentially, that's how we divide, you know, mild, moderate versus severe, and concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury.
Is it possible to have TBI, traumatic brain injury, and to have some symptoms, even if tests like CT scans indicate that the brain is normal?
Absolutely. So it's important to understand what these different studies do. So CT scans are very good at picking up blood in the brain. So that's important because if you hit your head and you're having this dazing or confusion, even momentarily, like I said, that by definition is a traumatic brain injury, and it would be useful to know whether there's actually any bleeding in the brain, because if there is bleeding, then that's something that needs to be dealt with surgically, potentially. So the blood needs to be removed from the brain, because if there's too much blood, then that can increase pressure in the brain, and that can be a real problem. So a CT scan will find that, but it won't find a lot of other types of brain injuries, especially the milder traumatic brain injuries or concussions. Usually, in fact, that would be normal. The CT scan result would be normal.
I want to pull Tom and Mary Longest into this conversation, because they have lived and are living a lot of what you write about in the book, Dr. Vaishnavi. Tom, as I mentioned, you fell off a ladder.
Yes.
8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Tell us what happened.
I was in the electronics field for many years, and we had our own business, and I was installing a television in a restaurant, and just the ladder went one way, I went the other, and I fell backwards. And when I did, I landed, I hit my arm first and shattered the bones in my arm, and then landed on my head on a concrete floor and ended up rupturing a disc in my neck. And at the time, I was unconscious shortly, and then the paramedics came and ended up, because of the severity of my arm, took me to Union Memorial Hospital here in Baltimore, and instead of shock trauma, and that's one of the main issues that might have caused my derailment from understanding my brain injury at first, because the protocol for typical brain injuries, if you hit your head and you're unconscious, is to go to shock trauma and get evaluated, and that just didn't, it was just human error, but didn't happen.
Were you already conscious again by the time the paramedics scooped you up and took you to the hospital?
Yes, ma'am.
And so the focus at the hospital where you first went was on what?
On my left arm, I had shattered the bones in my arm, and so they had to do several operations, and so that was the main focus. They just missed the brain injury part. I did tell them that I hit my head. They took x-rays of my neck, and like the doctor was saying, they didn't find from the x-ray, and even it may, they did not take a CAT scan or any other types of scans, but if they did, it's very likely that I may not have had those symptoms from internal bleeding, but it did show up afterwards in my symptoms in the hospital a few days later, and I started acting out. And
while you were still in the hospital?
Yes, ma'am.
And acting out in the hospital. Mary, maybe you can tell us. What did acting out in the hospital look like?
Angry, disgruntled, just frustrated. We did meet with a neuro doctor who did talk to Tom, but he dismissed him as angry. He was showing signs of a brain injury, but you can't hit your head on a concrete floor and not expect to have some damage. But he dismissed it, and he dismissed him. And I had no idea what a brain injury was, so I didn't know the questions to ask. I could, if I had known at the time, I would have been more demanding and insistent that someone take care of him and address his head injury. But, you know, we were ignorant to the fact, and we weren't able to do that.
So, so when, for either one of you, when did it, when did you start to focus, when did you start to focus on whether there was something wrong with your brain, Tom?
Well, I didn't understand. I think that's a big part, and the doctor makes a lot of great points in the book about understanding what brain injury and the different is and the different categories and how you go through the process. So for us, it took a lot longer. It took us, actually, I was watching a television show from the Brain Injury Association about living with TBI, and I didn't even know what TBI was. And this was
how did you happen to be watching this?
Well, you'd have to go back a lot longer, but it was a year and a half later.
A year and a half later?
Yes, yes. And so I was watching the show about symptoms of a brain injury, and it's just one of those God moments that I found out that, you know, that was my symptom and went through, and I immediately called the Brain Injury Association of Maryland, which is a nonprofit in Baltimore, in Maryland, in Kernan Hospital, about serving people with brain injuries, and that's their main focus. And then so they got me through the next steps, which was therapy at Sinai. They have a thing called Return Program, which takes you through a whole process of recovery. But that took 2 years. And by the time I finally got into that, before that time, for the year and a half prior, my issues were across the board. Like he's saying, anger, depression, you know, mood swings, memory, headaches, fatigue, and all the other symptoms. I thought I had blood sugar issues for years because I was getting dizzy while we would drive, but that turned out to be a vertigo issue, so lots of symptoms.
Lots of symptoms, and we'll get into mm-hmm, some of them. Sure. That's Tom Longest, who fell off a ladder 8 years ago, and it took like a year and a half or more to figure out that that injury had damaged his brain. His wife, Mary Longest, is here with us too, and this is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. On the line with us from Duke University Medical School is Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, who has written a book, co-written a book called The Traumatized Brain, A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior After Brain Injury. Dr. Vaishnavi, what goes through your mind when you hear Tom and Mary describe both his injury and how long it took to figure out that it was a brain injury?
Unfortunately, it's all too common to have that kind of a scenario. It is one of those things that intuitively we do know that hitting our head is not a good thing. We all know that. But the problem is that the mood and memory and behavioral symptoms that we describe in this book, these kinds of symptoms are also rather nonspecific. So they're, you know, as Tom was just describing, he thought he had blood sugar issues and things like that. So there are many other ways to describe those symptoms. But it is important, and that's one of the points of the book, is to be cognizant about all of these different constellation of symptoms that they can occur after a brain injury, and to be able to kind of put them all together. I think now, over time, you know, people have become more aware of this, and in fact, the movie Concussion that you all we're going to talk about later today. I mean, that hopefully those kinds of things will help in letting people understand and know that all of these kinds of symptoms, the wide variety of symptoms, can occur because of brain injury. And once that is recognized, you know, people will be able to get treatment faster. And not just that, for the chronic symptoms, and especially these neuropsychiatric symptoms tend to be the more common chronic problems after brain injury, those symptoms need to be dealt with the appropriate doctors, with the appropriate specialties. So neuropsychiatrists and behavioral neurologists do specialize in these kinds of symptoms oftentimes, and it would be important to be able to be funneled to the right doctor.
We're going to take a short break here. I am remiss in not having already invited listeners to be part of this conversation. If you have a question or if you have an experience with traumatic brain injury, we would love to hear from you. Our local number is 410-662-8780. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. We also have a toll-free line. If we're long distance for you, call us at 866- 661-9309. We are talking about traumatic brain injury with Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke Medical School, and with Tom and Mary Longest. Tom suffered TBI after he fell from a ladder. We're going to continue that conversation and add some more to it when we get back, so stay with us. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast here on WIPR. I'm glad that you are with us. We're talking about traumatic brain injury with Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke University Medical Center, who has co-written the book, The Traumatized Brain. Also with us are Tom and Mary Longest. Tom suffered a brain injury 8 years ago, and you can be with us, too. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Tom, I hear you talk about aggression. And Mary, I hear you tell what you observed in terms of sort of, you know, hostile reaction. And I'm thinking, you know, that's just like, isn't that just frustration because you're having headaches or frustration because your life has changed in some way? I mean, how were you supposed to figure out that that was a brain injury?
Well, that's a great question. We didn't know, like Mary said, and it's just something that just took many months of frustration of not knowing. We had our own business at the time that we ran for many years, had a nice six-figure income, and lost it all because
what?
Of...
Tell me what happened. How did you lose it?
I would sit in front of the computer and try to do the work after I was in the electrical engineering side. I designed million-dollar command centers for the military, and all of a sudden, now I can't do basic math in my head. I'm sitting there looking at the computer hours on end and just couldn't process the information. I couldn't remember things. I was, my customers were at the time, we didn't know. And so I would become argumentative with the customers, and we lost the, you know, one by one just started to go away. And so it literally changed our life and turned everything upside down. And it was just something, a series of events that went on.
What were you thinking, Mary, when you watched this happen?
I wasn't sure what was happening. I thought it was sleep deprivation. He was literally sleeping an hour and a half here, waking up, sleeping another hour and a half. And if I had walked out with the hospital with even a post-it saying your husband could have a brain injury, it would have changed everything, because I was Googling everything. Every symptom he had, I was Googling it. It never came up brain injury. It came up all kinds of other things, but not brain injury. And it was very frustrating because we had an 8 and an 11-year-old children, and that he went from reading them stories in bed and falling asleep with them to screaming and turning red in the face and my kids cowering behind me. That's not normal. We didn't yell at our house. We weren't yelling at our children. His language got bad. And I thought it was because of lack of sleep. His sleep pattern was thrown off. That was the only thing that was consistent that I could figure that could be. After about 6 months, I was like, you get help or you need to leave the house, because the environment in our house had become so volatile. And he went to a therapist. He referred him to a behavioral specialist, and he misdiagnosed him with ADD.
And attention deficit.
Even though he knew he had hit his head. So it was a real challenge, because the person that I had married and the father of my children was not there anymore. And it was a real struggle.
So you were like a single parent.
I was, absolutely. Because I had to remove him from he was living in the house, but I had to remove him from our life just to make our kids' life as normal as possible.
And what you're describing is before you happened to see the video mm-hmm. about traumatic brain injury.
Yes.
And it just clicked immediately when you saw that video?
At the moment, I was actually in tears, yes, because I knew that was it. I knew there was something not right, and that was the hope that was the answer that we were looking for. But the other thing is that socially, I would be talking to someone. I was singing in the choir at church, and then the next moment I'd be saying curse words to someone without any real understanding or filtering in my brain to know, you know, what I was supposed to be saying in a normal conversation, even though I dealt with business.
Oh, that's interesting. When yes. I heard you had sung in a choir and had stopped, I was confused because I thought, gee, I would have thought that would be calming and,
oh, yes.
and, you know, a wonderful experience. So why did he drop out of the choir? Now I understand if you're cursing. Dr. Vaishnavi, you've already told us that some of this is typical. Let me bore into the sleep deprivation aspect in particular that the longest thought might be explaining this. First of all, can that be a typical result of a brain injury? Can that itself cause other symptoms?
Right. So sleep problems can occur after a brain injury. That's absolutely true. There are different types of sleep problems that can occur, but your circadian rhythms can be turned upside down. And then there can be, because of the physical damage due to the brain injury in the brainstem, in the back of the brain, there can be certain types of sleep disorders that develop, types of sleep apnea, for example, central sleep apnea. So there are lots of different sleep disorders, and we do talk about that a lot in the book as well. But from the description that Tom just gave, that's really more typical of frontal lobe damage. So that's the front of her brain. So I don't know the details of his particular case, but this is a pattern that we do see a lot, where people become different. They're not who they used to be. Their personality changes completely, oftentimes, and the irritability, agitation, aggression, saying curse words, all of those things are actually pretty typical of a frontal lobe damage that can occur due to brain injury, traumatic brain injury.
Dr. Kevin Crutchfield has joined us. He is a neurologist and director of the Comprehensive Sports Concussion Program at LifeBridge Health. And Dr. Crutchfield also serves as a consultant for the Ravens and the Orioles. Welcome to Midday. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
I want to pick up on something that Dr. Vaishnavi mentioned in passing a few minutes ago. On Christmas Day, the movie Concussion is set to open. The film centers on the true story. It's based on the true story of Dr. Bennett Omalu, a forensic pathologist who conducted research on brain damage suffered by professional football players in around Pittsburgh in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, after conducting an autopsy on the body of former Pittsburgh Steelers center Mike Webster. Dr. Omalu discovered abnormalities that he described as the condition chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. And I understand, Dr. Crutchfield, that you know Dr. Omalu professionally.
I do. I met him at the NFL Players Union Health and Safety Committee. I was the first neurologist on that committee, and I was co-director of the return to play criteria that we developed that's currently in place in the NFL right now.
And were those of you in the field of sports medicine on the lookout for something? Or, I mean, did Dr. Omalu stumble on something, or were you all sort of looking for an explanation?
I'm not necessarily in the field of sports medicine.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually a stroke and brain trauma specialist and a former athlete. We developed a comprehensive sports concussion program to come at it from a brain injury and rehabilitation perspective. The gentleman sitting here to my right referred to our return program, and we have a return to work program as well. And we also work closely with the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. So Sinai Hospital of Baltimore is a brain injury rehab center.
I see. What are the key indicators of CTE in the brain? What do you see?
Well, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, I'll be very clear, the movie's going to make it seem like almost everyone gets this. It's still a very rare condition. I want to put that up front. So not everyone who suffers multiple trauma is going to get CTE. And what we're beginning to also notice is a lot of people who develop the symptoms of CTE, early dementia-type symptoms, behavioral changes, depression, cognitive impairment, may or may not have the deposition of the pathologic tau protein. So the folks...
I have to interrupt and ask you what that protein, tau protein.
Tau protein. CTE is a condition of people who are exposed to repetitive trauma. A breakdown product, tau protein, which is a natural building block of the brain cells themselves, gets hyperphosphorylated. And when it becomes hyperphosphorylated, it cannot be digested. So in our bodies, we're constantly making and breaking down things. And when things start to fail, where we can't break them down, they get deposited. And in the central nervous system, when things get deposited, it induces an inflammatory reaction. And that secondary inflammatory reaction creates a chemical cascade that leads to progressive cell death. And that's what leads to the death of the neurons in the brain and the deterioration of function. So not everyone gets that. the brains that are being sent up to Boston University, what they found is a high percent of former NFL players who donate their brains because they're symptomatic have this tau protein. But they've had a few brains that have been donated to people with the exact same symptoms that don't have this tau protein. And they've had some former NFL players who never got symptomatic donate their brains that did have the tau protein. So just because you have this protein deposit or suffered multiple injuries doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have the clinical syndrome or clinical presentation of chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
That's Dr. Kevin Crutchfield, a neurologist and director of the Comprehensive Sports Concussion Program at LifeBridge Health, here on Midday on WYPR. On the line with us from Duke University Medical School is Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, co-author of a new book, The Traumatized Brain, A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior After Brain Injury. And here also in the studio are Tom and Mary Longest. Tom suffered a traumatic brain injury about 8 years ago and is still figuring out how to cope with it, although as we hear, he and Mary have learned a lot. We're taking your calls too. 410-662-8780 is our local number. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. And there's a caller, Tom, from Boonesboro, who I think is asking sort of the key question I probably should have asked already. Tom, welcome to Midday.
Oh, thank you.
And your comment or your question?
My question is, does the brain have the capacity to repair itself after one of these brain injuries? Or do you have to engage in some form of therapy?
Let me, Dr. Vaishnavi, let me ask you to address that, and I'll also ask Dr. Crutchfield to address it. Thanks, Tom, for the question.
Yes, the brain definitely has a lot of plasticity, which means that basically the brain can kind of rewire itself. It's got the capability to go around areas or to kind of circumvent problems. So there is that capability. Now, doing things that are good for your brain recovery, of course, is important. So by doing therapy such as cognitive therapy or cognitive rehabilitation therapies, certain types of medications, things like good nutrition, exercise, meditation, yoga, all of those things we think are good for the brain, and I do recommend that to my patients. But the brain does recover oftentimes on its own, especially with milder brain injuries. And again, to put this in context, even concussions or mild traumatic brain injuries, most people do in fact recover from them, and the brain can do that on its own to some degree. Typically, within 3 months or several months, most people do in fact recover. But there are some people that, for whatever reason, don't recover fully, and we have to be cognizant about that. And for those patients in particular, they may need more intensive treatments. But it does depend on the severity of the injury. More moderate to severe brain injuries, I think it is very important to have rehabilitation.
Dr. Crutchfield, how would you answer Tom's question?
I agree with the other physician as well. But we also focus on two other main issues. You talked a little bit earlier about sleep disturbance. The brain heals itself best during sleep. So we try to get patients getting into a deeper, more restorative stage of sleep. So sleep deprivation will prolong the recovery of the brain. So we also look specifically for trauma-induced sleep apnea. If a patient's not breathing at night and gets into a state of hypoxemia or low oxygen, that's certainly going to inhibit the brain's ability to repair itself.
So that's a big issue.
Sleep deprivation. The other thing is they did a study at Johns Hopkins University, probably over a decade ago, looking at patients in the neurologic critical care unit, and they monitored their body's metabolism and found that because the brain is injured, the body's metabolic rate is 6 times its normal level. So even though you're lying in an intensive care unit perfectly still, you're chewing up a ton of calories. So the caloric requirements to make the energy to heal the brain also go up. So I like to say to my patients when I first meet them, I say, I want you having Thanksgiving therapy. I want you eating and sleeping, and I want you eating more than usual because your brain's caloric requirements are much higher than you would even think. So I love it when patients come in and say, Doctor, I'm just eating everything in sight. And I'm like, good. I rarely see a patient in the acute phase of a brain injury gain weight.
Really?
I don't want to see them losing weight because they're breaking down muscle mass to meet their brain's calorie requirements for the brain to heal.
The brain uses that much fuel.
Yes.
In the reorganization that it has to do after a brain injury.
It takes a ton of energy to reorganize itself and fix itself.
Dr. Vaishnavi, I want to follow up on when you talked about interventions. It's not clear to me as a layperson what I heard you talk about sleep and yoga and lots of measures that we might think are just general good health. But then when you talk about interventions, what are we talking about?
Well, so there are some specific interventions that people have studied, cognitive rehabilitation techniques. So basically retraining your brain for cognitive purposes. So, for example, as Tom was mentioning earlier, you know, he was having trouble looking at the computer screen, or he's having trouble understanding what he was seeing or doing basic math. I mean, those are the kinds of things that with cognitive rehabilitation techniques, where they basically help you practice and sort of train you again in lots of different techniques, that may be helpful. The other things that actually what Dr. Kreshfeld was just mentioning in terms of good sleep, having adequate nutrition and sleep, I completely agree. I mean, that's absolutely critical. And having just changing your lifestyle, being able to do the things that are good for your body and good for your brain in general, but doing them even more so after a brain injury, I think is very important. And that's why I was hearkening to the to exercise and yoga and those kinds of things. And especially as you recover. I mean, I think I'm referring more to the more chronic phases of traumatic brain injury. It's absolutely important to do those kinds of things so that your brain has the greatest chance of recovery. And as a neuropsychiatrist, I also want to mention that it's important to deal with the symptoms that do occur as they come. So, for example, depression, which is a very common consequence, we think, of traumatic brain injury, depending on the study you look at, anywhere from 30 to 40% of patients with traumatic brain injury do suffer from clinical depression. Well, that's important to deal with. You may think that depression is a natural consequence, you know, your whole life has been changed and so forth. And that's true, and that's part of it, but that may not be the whole story. It could be because of damage to particular circuits of the brain, because of the traumatic brain injury, mood regulation is affected. So irritability, depression, all of those symptoms come to the fore. And they need to be treated not just because they're important in symptomatically, and you know it helps people feel better and their families deal with things better if we treat them, but not just that. It may be that depression itself is bad for brain recovery. So it's really important to deal with the symptoms as they come as well.
Depression, it is my impression, can be hard to diagnose even with people who aren't reacting to a traumatic brain injury. Is it something that looking at the array of possible effects of a traumatic brain injury that we've been talking about, how do you zero in on whether this is, as you said, just reaction to the frustration of life changing compared to clinical depression?
Well, so we look at the severity of the symptoms. With clinical depression or major depression, by definition, we're talking about symptoms that pervade the day. So they're for most of the day across many days, so at least 2 weeks. So with sort of normal frustration, irritability, which would be expected, of course, with an injury, any injury which is life-changing like this. That's one thing. But if it's something which is more pervasive, it's going on longer, and it's not really reacting, it's not really changing with interventions, talking to people and so forth, well, then you wonder whether this is actually clinical depression. And you also take a look at where the brain damage is. You know, it's helpful to know, I think from my perspective, what parts of the brain were affected, because there are certain parts that are more vulnerable to traumatic brain injury, and there's certain parts that are more vulnerable to causing these kinds of neuropsychiatric symptoms, such as depression. So you take a look at that. You also take a look at their history before this. And did they have depression before the brain injury? And perhaps the brain injury triggered another another bout of depression. That's also possible. You take a look at the family history. So there are a lot of different things that one would take a look at. And but ultimately, you want to see if there's a correlation between the timing of the brain injury and the onset of the symptoms and the severity of the symptoms. Is the depression more pervasive and longer lasting than one would expect? And if so, then it's important to go ahead and get that treated with medications, perhaps. But there are also non-medication therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy and so forth. That can be very
talk
helpful.
Therapy. Yeah, that's Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, director of the neuropsychiatric clinic at Carolina Partners. He's also with Duke University Medical School here on Midday. We're going to take another short break. You're welcome to join us. If you or a loved one experienced a brain injury, what was your recovery like? Did you experience any of the symptoms that we've been talking about, like attention or memory problems? Give us a call. Our local number is 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We will be back with Dr. Vaishnavi, with Dr. Kevin Critchfield, director of the Comprehensive Sports Concussion Program at LifeBridge Health, and with Tom and Mary Longest. We hope you'll come too. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about traumatic brain injury with Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke University Medical Center, who co-authored the book The Traumatized Brain, published by Johns Hopkins University Press. Also with us is concussion expert Dr. Kevin Critchfield. He's a neurologist and director of the Comprehensive Sports Concussion Program at LifeBridge Health. He also consults for the Ravens and the Orioles. And Tom and Mary Longest are with us. 8 years ago, Tom experienced a brain injury after falling from a ladder. His injury had a profound impact on his career and his family. And you can call us also. 410-662-8780 is our local number. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Brandon is calling from Glen Burnie. Welcome to Midday, Brandon.
Good afternoon, ma'am. How are you doing?
Fine. And you?
Doing okay.
Okay. Your question?
Yes, ma'am. I was wondering if you could get TBI without any like contact to the head, any trauma physically to the head, like from a car accident, whiplash, or something like that.
Let me ask Dr. Vaishnavi, who addresses that in his book, The Traumatized Brain. Dr. Vaishnavi?
Yes. It is possible if the white matter fibers that connect the different parts of the brain can be vulnerable to stretching. And so if there is an jostling of the brain within the skull and stretching of these fibers within the brain, then it is possible to have an injury like this, to have a brain injury. Of course, typically we think of traumatic brain injury when there is actually an impact, but it is possible to get it just with the stretching of these white matter fibers.
Does that answer it, Brandon?
Yes, and like how long would that effect be from that, like remaining wise for healing?
How long it would take to heal? I think Dr. Vaishnavi is going to tell us it's very different in every case, but I should let the doctor speak for himself.
Yes. That is true. That is true. It's quite variable. We do usually the kind of a rule of thumb that we use is on the order of weeks or months. So several months, typically by 3 to 6 months, the vast majority of people do, in fact, recover. But again, there is so much variability and lots of different factors that probably are in the mix. Some factors that help you recover and some factors that may actually be a detriment to recovery. So that's where it's important to get evaluated.
Thank you. Marty is calling us from Middletown. Welcome to Midday, Marty.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Uh-huh, your question?
I could take up the whole 2 hours.
No, you can't.
no, I can't. Well, my mother has some form of dementia. She's 79 years old. And I've heard your panel talk about the tau protein, sleep apnea, depression, appetite, gain, weight loss. And I'm very curious to know whether there is there something similar to a functional MRI diagnose certain things versus post-mortem examination of a brain.
Well, I've always heard that one can't truly diagnose, with our current tools, truly diagnose Alzheimer's disease until there's an autopsy. But I'll ask either of our medical experts what the parallels are between dementia and traumatic brain injury, and if any of the tools that are used in traumatic brain injury can be helpful in diagnosing dementia. Dr. Crutchfield, any thoughts on that?
Well, very clearly up front, there's a lot of overlap when you're basing a diagnosis pre-mortem on symptoms. And even with our modern day imaging modalities, again, there's going to be overlap. If she truly has Alzheimer's disease, there's a lot of deposition of different proteins, some within the blood vessels themselves. We're beginning to appreciate more and more that Alzheimer's disease has a lot of overlap with vascular dementia, not just because people have vascular disease as they get older, but also because some of the toxic proteins are deposited significantly throughout the blood vessels of the brain. So you can't really pre-mortem make these diagnoses. And even when you look at different studies of trying to tag the proteins that are deposited in the brain on PET scans, or even doing functional MRI scans, which are blood flow based, you're really not accounting for the concurrent blood vessel disease when you're looking at those studies. So even though they create some pretty pictures and give us some insight, they're still not diagnostic at the present time.
Dr. Vaishnavi, do you want to add to this?
Yes, I would agree with Dr. Crutchfield there. The only thing I would add is that there are certain types of PET scans, functional imaging scans, PET, PET scans, that essentially will be able to see what are called amyloid plaques. And this is, amyloid is a protein in the brain that, as Dr. Crutchfield mentioned in the context of tau, it's the same kind of story where it's deposited. The protein cannot accumulates over time. And that, we think, is important, or at least is part of the story with Alzheimer's disease. And so that does accumulate over time, even naturally as we grow old, but oftentimes. But there is a rationale to using that kind of a scan, in the sense that if it doesn't show significant accumulation of amyloid plaques, then Alzheimer's disease is less likely. But again, nothing is really definitive in this kind of a thing other than pathology. So I'd agree, definitely agree with Dr. Crutchfield there. The other point I wanted to make is that with traumatic brain injury and dementia, we talked about CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy. The other thing, though, is that there might be some correlation between severe brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries, and the development of dementia later in life. Again, this is not definitive by any means, but there might be an increase, a 3- to 4-fold increase, but with traumatic brain injury, severe traumatic brain injury, and in terms of the correlation with dementia later in life. So I don't want to make it definitive, because it's not. This is just a correlation that people have seen. But there might be other factors, even a genetic factor. There's certain genes that might be involved, and that if you have a combination of things, you have a certain variant of your genetics, plus you have severe traumatic brain injury, that might make you more vulnerable to developing dementia later in life. Again, these are all correlations, nothing quite direct.
Thank you, and thank you for the call, Marty. Dr. Crutchfield, I want to ask you about an op-ed that the New York Times published today. I don't know whether you saw it, but it's headlined, "Parents, Stop Obsessing Over Concussions." It's written by a pediatric neurologist in St. Louis, who basically says we don't know enough about children, even with repetitive mild TBIs that they might get in sports. We don't know if that works the same way as the evidence that we're getting from professional sports players. And he worries about pulling kids out of sports when they, you know, kids tend to be obese, and they need the exercise. I'm wondering how this strikes you, whether you think parents are getting too worried. Obviously, this movie that's coming out on Christmas, opening on Christmas Day, is probably going to make some parents even more worried.
Well, I think you hit it on the head, Sheila. There are a lot of benefits of playing competitive sports. And as we look around at children today. You and I probably went out in the backyard and played all day long. Kids don't go outside anymore because parents are panicked that there's some psycho out there going to take their kids. So every activity children engage in has to be planned. And so they've even taken phys ed out of some of the school systems across America. So the kids are not getting the physical activity. So I can guarantee you there are going to be more kids in America developing chronic medical problems from obesity than any that ever played sports, because our children are becoming much heavier and inactive, and that's an unhealthy state. So organized sports keeps people healthier. And there's actually been data coming out that shows that athletes that are working out all the time, their brains function better than their sedentary fellow college students that don't participate in athletics.
Let me ask Tom or Mary Longus to jump in here too, because Tom, you played sports.
Yes, I played football.
And had some head knocks.
I've had a few concussions during that time. I've had a total of 6 so far in my life, and it has, I think, just the series of concussions has really may have been the last one that made the difference, I guess. But I would just say that if you are going to play sports, that the kids could be more aware of what to look for and things to, and have the coaches really, which is a big part of it, but to avoid as much as possible to have any kind of head impact and any possible challenges with brain injuries too.
So you think there's a connection?
I think there is a connection, and at least personally from my perspective, and I, that's all I can speak on. But as far as brain injuries in general, it just seems like if you're playing football, you watch every day. Every time we watch a game, there's something going on that someone gets their bell rung, and you just wonder what the effects are after that.
Tom, what was the process like of accepting that your life was going to be different?
You mentioned that word.
seems to be where you are.
I think that is probably as important as the word concussion that you used earlier, because accepting my brain injury took me years, and it took a lot of trial and error, and it took a wonderful wife and family that supported me, and we learned to relive our life. Unfortunately, I talked about sleep deprivation. I take 2 to 4 naps every single day. If I don't, I turn into my wife calls Jekyll Hyde. So it is something that it greatly impacts your life. So yeah.
Dr. Crestfield, I saw you nodding your head as Tom was speaking.
Well, it's huge. I like to counsel my patients that recovering from a brain injury is a journey that must be taken one step at a time. I always allude to it because I climb mountains, that we're at the base of a mountain and we can see the peak and we know where we want to go. But every climber has gotten to the top of Mount Everest the exact same way, one step at a time. And I don't want my patients staring in the rearview mirror of who they used to be, because you're going to crash into something if you keep staring in the rearview mirror. And what we want to do is progress forward. Where are we now? Where do we want to go? And what is the pathway to get us up this mountain on this journey to where we want to reach our maximal benefit of improvement?
Powerful thought. Dr. Vaishnavi, we have just a minute left. I'll give you the last word if there's some thought you would like to leave our listeners with.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's important to accept where you are with a brain injury, but at the same time, not to lose hope. The brain does recover oftentimes, or can recover, especially with help. So it's important to keep that in mind. And going back to one of the previous points, I do think it's important to save your brain as much as possible. Sports is important, and I agree that obesity is a huge problem, so we don't want to stop sports by any means. But it is important to be prudent about it and take precautions, and to be aware that if you hit your head, if you have a brain injury, you may have long-term consequences, including mood, memory, and behavior problems.
Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, a neuropsychiatrist at Duke University Medical Center, co-author of The Traumatized Brain. I also want to thank Dr. Kevin Crutchfield, a neurologist, director of the Comprehensive Sports Concussion Program at LifeBridge Health. And I especially want to thank Tom and Mary Longest for being with us and giving us some real insight into what this is like to live with. I want to thank also our listeners for tuning in to Midday. I hope you'll be back with us at noon tomorrow. We'll be talking about a statewide standing order that now permits Maryland pharmacists to dispense heroin overdose reversal drug without a prescription. We'll be talking to Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. And now, stay tuned for Out of the Blocks, 1 hour of radio, one city block, everybody's story. I'm Sheila Cast. See you tomorrow.